Okay. I have a blog that I started several years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And eventually it worked into, I just mainly cover oil and gas drilling issues. I started that because I'm a mineral owner and I wanted to be the next Barnett Shale millionaire. And so I started researching how to get the most money for my minerals. And what I discovered is that the process of drilling is so invasive and it's unregulated. We're going into new territory with all these new unconventional drilling techniques. And I was horrified. So I started a blog trying to educate other people and get them involved so that we can work toward getting better drilling regulations.
Okay, and can you go through some of the experiences you've had since you started the blog and started your work with this?
Mostly I just drive to work and drive home, and I notice things along the side of the road. I have seen big black hoses, and I'm curious when I see that. I wonder what it is. It wasn't there before, so when I saw that the hose crossed under the road and went into a drilling waste pit, then I wondered what was up, and I followed the hose, and I found one end was in a creek. And there wasn't anything coming out of the hose at the time I found it, but it could have been. It, you know, why was one end in the drilling waste and the other end in a creek? It didn't make sense to me. So I take pictures of these kind of things. I blog about it. Lots of people read my blog. The media reads it quite a bit. The industry reads it. Some regulators read it. Department of Homeland Security sometimes reads it. So I was just curious, and I started noticing things around me more and reporting those things on my blog, taking pictures, taking videos, and that's, my blog has become pretty popular now. I think it's, this week it's rated as the number one blog in Texas.
Wow. Also, we had discussed earlier, you had talked about many pits. There's waste pits that were the fluid that comes back up from drilling gets stored in pits, and you had discussed that many pits, especially out in the country, are unlined out once you get outside of the city. Wanted to discuss that in relation to many people in the New York area who still have a lot of faith in the regulatory aspect of this with regards to this drilling, and many people are convinced that the companies will take care of their property and take care of their health, and so that seems kind of contradictory.
That's really a common misconception, that people believe that their government is going to take care of them. But in Texas, we do not have a requirement for the drilling waste pits. They do not have to be lined or fenced. And so a lot of times they don't. If a mineral owner leases their minerals, they can have stipulations put in their lease, but most people don't know that. It's a big undertaking to do as much educating of yourself as I have, so most people aren't aware that they need to put some environmental protections when they lease, or better yet, just don't lease. But we do not, Texas does not require that the pits are lined or fenced, and our drilling regulations are very lax. Our regulators have some pretty serious conflict of interest issues, and this has been reported on Bill Moyers. Brett Shipp was on Bill Moyers with his reporting of the conflict of interest issues, and I don't believe this is just unique to Texas, because when industry moves in, they make very seductive offers to people. They contribute to campaigns. They contribute to the United Way. They donate to help a neighborhood with a park, and it's all part of their PR campaign to to get in your neighborhood, and once you have signed, it's too late to turn back. You can't turn back after you've signed the drilling lease. It's a legal document. They don't tell you everything that's coming. It's not just, you know, that they'll show you a picture of this well pad, well site with just a couple of tanks sitting out there and all landscaped around it. That never happens. That's just not the reality. There will be trucks. The drilling process is very invasive and loud and smelly and noisy, and the lights are bright. And when that's all over, then you have trucks coming every day, lots of trucks, and all kinds of people coming back and forth from the well site. But then you have the pipelines, because, and they don't tell you about this. And right now, people in Fort Worth, in neighborhoods where children play, and of course, it's always in the poor neighborhoods where this happens, but Chesapeake Energy is installing a 16-inch, unodorized, highly flammable, highly corrosive wet gas pipeline through these people's front yards, and it will be there forever. These wells last for 30 years, some of them.
And that kind of brings into what I want to discuss. There's now drilling in the city of Fort Worth. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
And how did this progress? Has there always been drilling there? From what I understand, that there wasn't always drilling there, and has since creeped in and moved so that it's now actually in the city limits.
Yes, it is actually, downtown Fort Worth has drilling rigs up right now, and this has never been done before in this dense population. And, you know, like I said before, the regulations are not, what most people don't realize is that the oil and gas industry has broad exemptions from every one of our federal environmental statutes. And these are loopholes, like the loophole that allows them to not disclose the chemicals used in hydraulic fracturing. And this kind of drilling, industry will say, you know, hydraulic fracturing has been going on for 60 years. And that's true, but it was vertical, not horizontal. And horizontal is much more invasive, and now it's never been done in such a condensed area and so highly concentrated in such a condensed area before. And that's why we're having the earthquakes, because it's an exchange of matter. They're pulling matter out, they're pumping matter down, and they're fracturing the shale and matter, the water and everything weighs something, and it's not all recovered. So this has never been done on this scale before, and we need to slow down and look at these issues and study it and see if we are going to proceed in drilling in urban areas and even in the country. With this invasive technique, we need to slow down a little bit and be sure what we're doing instead of just rushing headlong. But I believe that industry does not want to slow down. They want to rush things as fast as they can and get all these areas leased up, because then you can't really change your mind after you've leased.
Absolutely. Also, there's also something to a belief that from what I've seen in the Texas area, that originally the well spacing and the number of rigs per acre started at one number and has since changed as they wanted more and more gas. And I think that's something that many people in this area aren't necessarily grasping, is that they might give a number right now, but then when they find more gas or they think they can get more, that the numbers may change, and that what starts out as a seemingly potentially safe thing will end up turning into something where you're having drill rigs all over the place, and even in downtown centers in the Northeast too.
Well, it's never really safe because it's not fully regulated. If
Right.
it's fully regulated, it can be safer if it's fully regulated. But yes, what they do is they pull you in with about 640 acres. And in that 640 acres, they will say, well, we're just going to drill one well. But actually, in Texas, they can drill a well every 20 acres. So they drill one well in your 640 acres, and that holds that 640 acres. If they have one producing well, then that's all they need to hold you in that pool, and you can't ever escape. And so they go around drilling one well in every 600 acres. And then after they've after they've done that, then they come back and they start drilling more. And there's an area in the Newark East Field, just a little bit north of Fort Worth, where it's just littered with these gas wells. There's at least one every 20 acres. And I have a video that I did of aerial photographs, and you can see the density, but you can also just go look on Google Maps on Highway 287 just north of Fort Worth and see, if you look on the satellite, you can see that it's just solid. What used to be farm and ranch land is just solid gas wells now.
Going with, you'd said that you had gotten into this by just looking and watching on your way to and from work. How has the area changed, not just visually, but aesthetically, audibly? How have you interpreted the area changing from since this drilling has started?
Well, my dark skies are gone. It's not dark. When I moved out into the country, I liked to drive my truck out into the pasture and look at the meteor shower. They have one every year on my birthday. And now you can't really see it because everything is so bright. The roads are always torn up because these huge trucks are going up and down at the roads constantly. I can't even tell you how many times I've been run off the road. In 1 year, I had to buy 8 new tires because I would be run off the road by these big rigs, moving these big rigs around, and you don't have anywhere to go but in the ditch. So the roads are always torn up. The air quality is just horrible. It's smog. I live out in the middle of nowhere, and I can look out my window, and 75 yards from my house, you can't see the tops of the trees sometimes because it's so smoggy. And I've taken videos and loaded them on YouTube, that if you just do a Google search for TX Sharon, you'll find my blog and you can find my YouTube videos and see for yourself. Pictures don't lie. So there are these, what used to be this beautiful area country, there's gas wells everywhere. They do this illegal dumping sometimes if they don't want to take their The truck doesn't want to take their waste product to an injection well. They just dump it on the side of the road and let it run everywhere, and then no vegetation grows there for years. So that tells you how toxic this stuff is.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, for two different groups of people, for people who perhaps are thinking about drilling and people who aren't thinking about drilling and are thinking more about what they can do, what kind of advice can you offer people after witnessing this and getting involved the way you have? How can you advise people and what they can do? And not just activists, but people who are thinking about drilling and may not have a solid idea of what to do one way or another.
If people are thinking about leasing and there's no rush, that's the main thing. The landmen will come and they will try to create an emergency, sort of like a used car salesman, and they will tell you, well, if you don't sign now, you're going to lose out, and that is just never the truth. Just you have lots of time. You need to get a very good lawyer who can help you with some environmental clauses in your lease. If you'll go to the Oil and Gas Accountability Project, they have some recommendations for best practice there, and you can. There also is a publication called Oil and Gas at My Door by Lisa Sumi, and that's the first book that I read when I started trying to research leasing my minerals. The best thing to do is just be fully informed, but there is no rush. This gas has been under the ground for millions of years, and it will still be there when we figure out some better technology to get it out of the ground more safely. So there's not a big rush to lease, and don't believe that there is a big rush to lease. They'll try to push people into leasing. And if you don't want to lease, you can work toward drilling reform. And I started a national group called National Alliance for Drilling Reform, and we would love to have new members working toward getting the best reforms that we can. The first thing we're trying to work on is to close what is called the Halliburton loophole, which is a Cheney-era loophole in the Safe Drinking Water Act, and we want to close that loophole, and then we're going to start working on the other loopholes in the Clean Air Act and the Stormwater Runoff Act and try to get better regulation for this industry.
Do you have contact information for that group you started and how people in this area can get involved?
If they go to my blog, they can. There's a way to contact me there through my email, the same way that you contacted me, and it's fine to give that contact information out. I have dozens of people email me every day about this.
Okay, and I guess I had another question. I kind of was kind of starting to wrap it up, but I had a question about your experiences with the gas. You had mentioned about Homeland Security reading your blog and the gas companies reading your blog. What's your been experiences with, have you run into any people in any of those groups?
Sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating when I post something about Chesapeake Energy, and I have, in the last 2 days, 83 times Chesapeake Energy has been on my blog. It can be a little bit intimidating when that happens, but I'm committed, and I just keep going forward. When I can tell you that the times that Homeland Security has visited there, it did make me have some little heart palpitations. And I've had a death threat, and I have a lot of people calling me names. They call me a communist and a lunatic and all kinds of names like that, but most of the time these people are afraid that they're going to maybe, they probably work in the industry and they're afraid they'll lose their jobs but when you talk to them and really get a dialogue started with them, that you find out that they are just as worried as you are. One vice president of operations revealed to me when I was talking with him that I told him that, you know, your industry just needs better regulation. And he said, our children will be better off for it. So, you know, everybody is worried about this, but they just don't always reveal that at first.
Well, is there anything you want to leave the audience with? Any thoughts or anything we hadn't covered that you'd like to talk about?
I think it's really important for people to write their congressional representatives and ask them to support the FRAC Act. That's FRAC Act. And that FRAC Act will close the Halliburton loophole so that we can regulate hydraulic fracturing under the Clean Water Act. And I think that's a really important thing to do right now. And people need to realize that natural gas is not a clean energy. It's another fossil fuel. And When people say that natural gas is cleaner than coal, it is true that it burns cleaner, but if you consider natural gas from cradle to grave and the damage and destruction it does, plus all the leaks, the methane that leaks into the air, some studies say that that it is actually dirtier than coal. So if someone says to you that natural gas is a clean energy, I just say prove it. Prove that it's any cleaner than coal.
That's a really good point. I think that's an incredibly important point, especially that seems to be a main propaganda point for many gas companies and government agencies talking about how clean natural gas is. So I appreciate you calling and having this call with me. And I can announce your website on the air, but if you wanted to tell everyone the name of your website for people to find it.
Okay, it's txsharon.blogspot.com.
All right, and
Or you can just the easiest way to find me is Google TX Sharon, Texas Sharon, and you're going to find all sorts of energy interesting things where they call me lunatic and but that's the best way to find my blog.
okay, and I thank you for calling, and hopefully this will be on the air tomorrow morning or into the afternoon between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. I have a few more guests, so it'll be online at whrwfm.org. You can listen to it live on the internet. So, and if not, I can even get you the whole radio. I can show you how to download the radio show, so I can get you in. But other
That'd
than
be
that,
great.
yeah, I appreciate you talking with me.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
All right, bye.